Hello, Niels.
Goedenavond.
Yeah. You are a really European person, apparently, because you're French, but you were brought up in Germany, and your last name sounds Spanish?
Sounds Spanish, exactly.
But you don't know
so
about
I have,
that.
I have Spanish ancestors, so in that sense I'm pretty European, but I also dance Argentinian folklore, so I'm trying to be even more of an international person.
So you made this documentary a few years ago already, and you worked on it for quite a long time.
True that, yeah. Probably too much time that I spent on working on that film, which is linked to two reasons. I'm a greenhorn in filmmaking, because I'm trained in sociology and not in proper filmmaking. So I had to learn everything from scratch. Basically, every process of filmmaking I had to learn myself the hard way, the rough school. And the other reason was that I lacked funding, because I didn't even apply for typical funding. I tried doing crowdfunding when it all started. The first crowdfunding campaign started in 2009, I think.
So there were more crowdfunding campaigns?
Actually, there was four in total, but most of them were like really tiny. That was when I learned about crowdfunding and how it works. So even that was a pain in the... etc.
You did crowdfunding to learn about crowdfunding.
It's like the entire film process was learning by doing.
Okay, I also saw that you had support from a European program and a French program, or...
Yeah, but that's only like tiny little sponsorships for cultural projects. Mm-hmm. So just to give rough numbers, the Défi Jeune was 5,000 euros, and the most substantial sponsorship was from that European...
Youth in Action.
Youth in Action, and that was 10,000 euros. When we had that, then we really thought, okay, that the film is done, we're all set, and it's perfect. But then we didn't know that it would last so long to make the film, and obviously it cost way more than that. And most of that price we paid by sweating and by investing our own sheer energy, by not sleeping, and by basically just forgetting about our normal lives for a long time.
Have you been so intensely working on it for such a long time?
Right? Yeah, actually... We filmed in three countries, in Cuba, in England, and in France. The scouting was requiring a lot of energy. Writing the film was probably the least of a problem, but then the post-production was horrid. As I said, because there was a greenhorn, lots of problems occurred that I wouldn't have expected to come, and then we had to work over and over again about the same issues. So basically I had to mix the film for 2 years before I finally found out that I just had to go for the most expensive film studio and they would do the good job. And that's what saved the project. But as always, with rough schools, you can learn a lot. So I guess now I'm trained as a filmmaker and I can do another one with more ease.
I wonder, so you studied as a sociologist, yes?
Yes, okay. In Paris. I studied,
in Paris?
Yeah.
So, what were your plans? I mean, did you just study it because you thought it was interesting and you thought, okay, when I do something that's interesting, I will find something to do in that field?
Yeah, I guess that was how I functioned and how I still function. Uh-huh. Like I'm only dragged by fields of interest, and when the fields of interest change, then I do something else. And I never really subdued to a super long-term thing. I never had any plan to work as a sociologist for real. It was just the tools that I wanted to acquire for understanding the world and society.
So when and how did you get the idea to make this documentary?
I think I always wanted to do something with film, be it documentary or other film. But since I was raised without TV, me and my brother, we always went to the cinema. And I guess that's where we were getting more sensitive to good film and probably getting interested in that beautiful medium and what it can... like how it can help to address large audience about important issues. So I discovered the political aspect of filmmaking. Mm-hmm. But there was also like a particular moment when I decided that I had to get active, and that was in 2005 when I went to Argentina, where I witnessed how extraordinarily destructive capitalism can be when it's applied to agriculture, and when the return on investment is stronger than agronomical intelligence. What happened and what I witnessed was that a tobacco producing company decided to expel a tribe, an ancestral tribe that had been living there for centuries, and basically get chased out of the forest with sticks and with bulldozers.
A lot of violence.
By a militia. Exactly, lots of violence.
And they were not compensated or whatever?
Not at all. They were just drawn out and were forced to live in the outskirts of larger cities. So even the culture was destroyed by that. And for me, that was really like an awakening moment. Yeah, and when I was coming back to Buenos Aires, I found out about the documentary film school, and I really started thinking of doing myself a documentary.
So you found out about a documentary school?
Actually, it was La Universidad Popular de las Madres de la Plaza de Mayo, the mothers of the disappeared youngsters from the 70s dictatorship. They had founded a popular school, like an evening school, and there I learned about filmmaking. That was the first steps, let's say. It was just two classes, I guess, that I take.
But they did have a course in filmmaking.
Yeah, exactly.
With the goal of making political stuff, I suppose.
An impact, yeah, to achieve a certain impact. And there was also journalism courses and lots of very interesting things. So yeah, probably this was the trigger. And then when I came back to Paris for my sociology studies, I found out about this documentary festival. I got to know a person who had already done a film for roughly 8,000 euros. So I told myself, if he does that, then I can do that as well. The only difference being that he was like a pro and I wasn't. The film is fully ready since the year 2012. And then in 2013, we had a German launch. And in 2014, we had an Austrian theatrical launch. And now this year, we will have like something like 5 launches, which is awesome. And there is 19 subtitle versions. So the film is really getting more international than I ever was, because it talked about me being very European. And the film now is speaking 19 languages.
Great.
Even including Japanese, Korean, Chinese, Mandarin. So yeah, let's hope that the film will make it to China, because for now, I think it has been screened only in Korea.
So which nincompoop has made Chinese subtitles if the film isn't even going there?
That was a friend who thought of just doing it voluntarily, but we haven't ever approached... Well, there was a Chinese festival that was interesting in screening our film. Somehow they had gotten to know about the film. But then when they said they wanted to screen it for free, I said, no, thanks. Actually, they wanted even to show it in all the universities for free and in the TV station for free, in CCTV, and like in Chinese television. I was like, why should I agree to this? I mean, it's just not fair. I mean, I have worked so much.
Now, about the documentary itself, I watched it, and what struck me was that it was mainly about agriculture, yes?
Yeah.
Was that so much about this? Because you just told me that you saw this happening in Argentina, and maybe I thought that your main focus might have been agriculture for that. Of course, it touches a lot of other subjects by the side, but I thought that transition was also about transport, about medicine, about energy, about heating. And you don't seem to touch those subjects.
Yeah, actually, that was the precise idea. It was intended to be a film about agriculture, about farming.
Okay.
And then I realized that I had to take a broader scope to actually give value to the fact that agriculture is much more than just those things that you do on your fields, but it's also something that is intimately linked with our culture, with economics, with ecology, with biodiversity, with the hunger crisis, with climate crisis, actually energy crisis, actually any kind of crisis right now is linked to our food system as well. So it's extremely intertwined. So it's a film about agriculture that shows that there's much more things that we have to care about when we want to care about agriculture. And so it's also a film that wants to tell people to not only be consumers till the end of their lives, but also to think of how they could get active and become producers and ultimately re-empower their lives. Because what I find very sad about modern day civilization is that we are confined to living in very solitary spaces with hardly any solidarity left. Yeah, I found that pretty intriguing. And so the film is also intended to be an action movie, actually. That's what I like to call it. So it's more of a film that wants to kick people's basically ass. And make them dig up the parking of their school or whatever. And it actually works pretty well. I think the film has triggered an awful lot of transition initiatives, not only in Germany, but also in Belgium. And there is more and more initiatives that claim that Voice of Transition was the trigger.
So that's nice.
When I heard about that, then really I felt that I had reached my goal. Yeah, now that the film is doing its way, and I'm finally able to earn my living from it by charging an entrance fee when there is a public screening, by selling the DVD, and I would also be able to have a little rest, make a vacation, and yeah, that's also why I'm on a tour right now, because I can afford being on the tour.
So, and what is your next project, or what have you been doing since the film was released, or have you been touring with the film all the time?
No, not at all. Distribution as such is already a project per se, a very intense project. So should I have known that before, then I might not have done it.
Really?
I would probably have said, okay, if it's for the money, then I just work in a proper job, I copy left the movie out of it and upload it to the internet for free. That I should probably have done it, but now I went down the other lane. But I'm still thinking of actually turning this film into a copyleft film, but I will ask legal advice for this. Might not be possible because there's archive material from Ina, and it's a bit complex. Yeah, it's difficult to change a copyrighted material to copyleft, but we'll see.
So, but what do you do then?
Yeah, besides distributing the film, I also did campaign videos for Democracy International, for instance, and I was an assistant producer for a viral video that was Democracy, and another viral video.
So you've been in filming again?
Yes. I had sworn myself not to ever do a film again, but I have changed rules for, like, never do a film alone again. In a good team, I guess, it's less of a hassle. And probably in autumn, we'll go to Africa with a friend and film a great project for Slow Food International, which is about permaculture in cities.
In cities.
Yeah, and it's going to be something educational.
That brings me to another question. Somewhere in the movie, somebody says that we have an enormous amount to learn from what we call developing countries. Now, I've been involved with rights for indigenous people, and I always get struck about how people in our culture are so keen to pretend as if they have invented something, while in fact it has been around since the beginning of humanity. Okay? Like we discover America and such nonsense. For example, permaculture, many indigenous peoples live like that. They let nature do what it thinks is best, and it knows what is best, of course, and they manage it a bit left and right to get a bit of a bigger yield or whatever. So I've always been thinking, why isn't there a link between people who are into rights for indigenous peoples and this whole permaculture transition movement?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the links happen pretty often. The people that I hang out with, normally we all drank Zapatista coffee and we had those ideas about working together with indigenous tribes. Narrative also about a progress that will never come, that is like an empty promise, like a distant Chinese star that actually has never existed.
Mm-hmm. I've been in Niger a lot, and I've seen a lot of development work, but it's always about development, you know, they always want to change the way people are doing things there and make it better, but there seems to be such a lack of respect for local knowledge.
Right. And exactly with the permaculture and with agroforestry, for instance, we find that indigenous tribes have been doing this for ages and for millennia. It's enough to go to any tropical country and you will see that people know about how to make different species benefit, like synergetical relations between a mango tree and a cacao tree and a coffee tree. And there's so many links that you can benefit from. And one of the angles of the film is also to say, we have so much to learn from nature, and we should go back to that complexity and to that intelligence of natural ecosystems to fertilize our agronomy. Basically, that always means less idiotic, more intelligent system. One approach that we're talking about in the film is agroforestry, and that is in our world, in Europe, I guess there was also ancestral systems. For instance, in Brittany, you can find in the medieval ages, you will find tradition of planting trees and having sheep grazing underneath. And even in monasteries, normally you would have a vegetable garden with trees as well. And they would have a mutual benefit when the trees were shading the vegetables and the vegetables were benefiting from the roots, the micro roots that would turn themselves into compost. So, yeah, you could learn from your ancestors pretty much. But also you have to admit that there was fantastic inventions that came pretty late in the human history. For instance, the compost, the Misthaufen.
The Mist Hope.
The Mist Hope, yeah, is something that has been invented like very late.
Really?
Yes, this was in the 18th century only. And you can clearly see that from 1750 on, there was a sudden increase in productivity in the yields. And
because of the Mist Hope.
Exactly. It's a fantastic invention.
Revolution.
But now we have gone away again from the Mist Hope. And we have fully embraced the chemical way with the nitrogen fertilizer, nitrogen-based fertilizers. But there also we are heavily reliant upon natural gas, and obviously it's a finite resource, so we will come to the moment where green fertilizers will be more competitive in sheer cost terms than chemical fertilizers. And I guess that can be very soon, can be in 2020. So I'm looking forward to this, when organic agriculture will be more competitive. And actually, well, I'm getting out of topic now, but I find this pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, one thing that strikes me a lot is that we're constantly externalizing real costs. We also call this the ecological rucksack, is when you say this chocolate bar is €1, when in fact it should cost €6. If it's a non-organic chocolate, if people have been paid in an unfair way, if Saudi Arabian oil has been used with machines from Taiwan and everything, and then you realize that you have polluted so much and that you have destroyed so many square meters of nature, that it should in fact cost way more. And till we won't tackle this problem on a legal way, say, start in Europe, yeah, then we won't be able to achieve anything.
But we, I mean, there are people making a nice profit out of this system, so they won't be too keen to change it, will they? And aren't they the ones who are have the biggest voice in European politics, for example?
Yeah, I'm not putting so much hope into this way, which is why the Transition Town movement focuses on the bottom-up approach, not only, but mostly. It's also about, obviously, working with the local council, because we have seen that this can be very effective as well. But not to waste too much energy on saying, oh, well, when will the huge companies finally save us by applying our great ideas? And there we can wait very long. So the idea is basically starting to work today, very concrete actions, pragmatic solutions. Not worry too much about ideology, just being extremely pragmatic and not lose like the bigger picture, of course, and also the global perspective and the solidarity issues, but to be pragmatic. And then finally, by adding up micro solutions, we will probably end up having a critical mass, achieving that critical mass that we need to achieve a bigger, larger scale change.
Now, when the film was made, there were 1,100 transition groups, no, transition towns, in 43 countries. So, and where are those countries?
I think it was 34 countries at that time, and now I know that it's more countries. I think in South Africa there is a transition initiative now, a couple of them. But there's still continents where transition doesn't seem to be really up and coming, and Africa is one of those continents. But obviously, you know, they have a totally different take. Like when Rob Hopkins, when I asked him about developing countries, he was basically saying something pretty smart, and he was saying that the transition initiatives, he sees them more as a detox for the West, like something that you would recommend a dependent person, someone suffering from oil dependence, for instance, or industry dependence. So it's an approach that is safe to heal us from capitalism up here. But probably, not probably, it's very evident that transition can also be an interesting tool for African countries, so people can cherish what is left of their resilience and their subsistence activities.
I like the fact that that word is so central,
right.
Resilience.
Yeah, it's pretty neutral and thus all the more subversive, I think. You know, sustainability is not subversive at all, because you can, as we French would say, tu peux en mettre à toutes les sauces. You can, you know, sustainability, people talk about green development and sustainable development, etc. So no one is ever weighing this word and really trying to compromise it and find its limits. And resilience is very straightforward. Yeah. But it comes from the ecosystemic sciences and from ecology. So it has a very naturalistic approach as well. But transition is more than only resilience. It's also about values we cherish, like solidarity, like fun and love, and to value our ancestors. So it's more than only a scientific approach, obviously.
Another thing that struck me while I was looking at the film, they're all white people.
You haven't missed the Cuban part?
No, I haven't missed the Cuban part, but what I mean, in France and in England, I think I've seen one black man in England, because he was walking in the street. But there are also, how do you call them? I mean, we have to be very careful now, because terms are changing all the time. So people who are from another origin and who have been living for one or two or three generations in England, how come we don't see those people involved?
That's an interesting question. I guess probably people from external origins, probably they don't have that same 35 hours week that most of the established Dutch people have, maybe, and have maybe they don't have access to a bourgeois lifestyle where they can afford investing a few hours of their time.
So transition is a bourgeois thing, then?
Well, yeah, probably. I mean, it's like Marxism that comes from a bourgeois thinker, and I mean, there's a lot of things that have their origin in the bourgeois milieu. But it's not only a bad thing, but what we have to struggle for now, obviously, is that we build a cultural bridge to other minorities. And you can find actually a lot of initiatives where they have intercultural gardens. And actually, this is a term that has been coined over the last year. So there's many cross-cultural gardens. You can find some also in Belgium, I guess. I think I even were there a few years ago. I was introduced to one garden where there was Turkish mothers working there.
Is there going to be a next movie, and will it be about something completely different? Or
I hope so. I don't want to be the vegetable filmmaker.
No.
And I have a few ideas, but for now I'm not watering those seeds, those ideas. I don't want them to grow so fast, because I know what a terrible hassle filmmaking can be. So maybe I should just write, and you will tell me how this works. And simple journalistic work, and that doesn't require so much technology like film does. Because it's an industry, and if you want to be paid properly, then you need TV funding. If you need TV funding, you need to format your film. And so there's a lot of dependencies and things that you don't want to get involved with. One subject that I find pretty interesting is beauty.
That's philosophical.
Yeah, take it from whichever approach, but I find that this is an underrated motor of society, how beauty can change lives. So yeah, that could be also a totally different film. It could also be a horror thriller, which would be the opposite of what's the transition.
The thing that bothers me sometimes is that there's big money in agriculture. If people really in big numbers are going to push for a system change, are they just going to move in a different mode so they can still make money from it? It sounds silly, because the whole transition thing is about small, local, community things, and that's completely in contradiction with the whole big scale.
Not only that, because also using permaculture methods, which are deeply inspired by natural ecosystems, natural ecosystem functions, cannot be compatible with capital interests, with return on investment. It's just totally the opposite. The more you let nature do free things for you, the less someone can earn money from it. I particularly like one quote of my film where Jean-Pierre Darlon, a French microbiologist of Marxist color, says that we won't see any change in agriculture before our food and farming ministry will adopt a new name, and that is a ministry for free ecosystem services. And because that's when really everything will be turned upside down. And before that, Monsanto will just continue on its way. Agroforestry is a bit in between. It's making useless fertilizers, or like a big portion of it, and it also probably will be able to save on pesticides. When you plant trees, then there is more auxiliary insects that will help you prevent pests to flood your fields. But it's still manageable on an industrial scale. You still can send your combined harvester through your fields. So there is an industrial model that is possible, but in the same time, it's totally a degrowth model of doing farming, because it goes down another alley than where Monsanto wants us to go.
And it has trees.
And it has trees. So it's beautiful. Yeah, and there's so many positive aspects of planting trees into your fields. So that's also a very interesting thing that I'm fighting for. And maybe one new project will be campaigning for agroforestry, just more directly in Germany in the year to come, because I'm already in contact with people who want to make some kind of a campaign group on this issue. So Save the Trees is maybe one of my bottom lines.
Is there anything that you still would like to add to the interview?
Everything is connected, so I think there is going to be some stronger incentives for us in the years to come to change the path. And this is a euphemistic way of naming it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it sounds positive.
Yeah, I'm not belonging to those dreamers who hope for this catastrophe to come, because it's going to be painful, that's for sure. But at least there's going to be positive side effects. And so when people are laughing about transition initiatives and saying, well, you know, before you change the big business model and before you change the big picture, you won't be able to make a significant change. But I want to say that, at the contrary, we have to now change our cultural modes of relating to each other and plant little seeds, make little social businesses where we think of the common good. And once we have planted those seeds, when those crises will break or rust, then those seeds will have the perfect chance to get bigger and to make us transition to a better society.
Okay, I think that was it.
Well, many thanks, Yves.
Thank you.